This season of Off the Path has had a few deviations. For one, we're calling it Off the Plank because it centers on stories of the sea and pirates. And we've been ending each episode with a sea shanty by the New York City-based group The Ranzo Boys. For example, they sang Spanish Ladies at the end of our episode about people obsessed with Moby Dick.
A whale rant and will roar, like true Yankee weathermen will rant and will roar, on deck and below, until we sight gay head off old Martha's Vineyard. And straight up the channel to New Bedford we'll go.
The Ranzo Boys are Lafayette Matthews, Jules Pipearl, and Lindsay Smith. I met them at sea shanty festivals, where we would all sing our favorite songs together. I sat down with all three members of the Ranzo Boys around Lafayette's dinner table to talk music, history, pirates, and anything else that came to mind.
Who are the Ranzo Boys?
Well, we do have a tagline. Our tagline is putting the queerness back in traditional music.
That's Jules Pipearl.
Because it's always been there. Spaces like riverfronts and ships ports have always been transient working class spaces, and those therefore are always queer spaces. And so we like to find that queerness both by finding it in the history and then also because we are queer people making this music.
Where did the name Ranzo Boys come from?
So Louisa Jo Killen was a singer in the folk revival of the 60s, who was hugely influential, particularly in the world of maritime music. And she came out as a trans woman very late in life. A song that she used to sing a lot, one of her sort of signature songs, was the Wild Goose Shanty, which has in it, the refrain is Ranzo, Ranzo.
Did you ever see a wild goose sailing on the ocean? Ranzo, Ranzo, way, hey, they're just like them pretty girls when they get the notion. Ranzo, Ranzo, way.
Well, my interest in folk music or traditional music is that it's the oral history of the working class.
That's Lindsay Smith.
You have a lot of things that are, you know, written down historically that are found in other formats. This kind of music that was often passed along from person to person is one way that we have some memory of what ordinary people's lives have been like for hundreds of years. And I just think that's really cool.
Most people, when they think about music, they're thinking about starting with things they heard on the radio, things they heard on Spotify, things they heard on albums. You know, they're thinking about popular recorded music. How did you come to this?
In college, there was a group of people who would sing those songs on Wednesday nights.
That's Lafayette Matthews.
When we first started going, we didn't know very many, but you would go week after week and we would learn more songs. And that's when we discovered that there was this whole world of songs that were passed down from person to person. And that intergenerational component too is what really draws me to it, because these are stories that have resonated with people for hundreds of years. And you learn so much about what ordinary life was like for those people.
A lot of these kinds of songs, like work songs and walking songs and shanties that were used for work, are meant to be sung along to. Sometimes even if there's a song that doesn't have a chorus and you can't sing along to it, people will just like hum under it. And some of the most beautiful experiences I've had at song night and other sings is like someone will sing a really beautiful ballad and everyone will just like quietly hum a chord underneath. And so you're just making music together. It's kind of like a jam session without any instruments.
The reason those songs are still being sung is because they have a resonance for us today. Whether that's I'm in love with this girl, or I hate my boss, or, you know, God, it's going to be a long time to get over this mountain.
And there's a song that you sing, Davis, called Pay Me My Money Down, that goes, pay me, pay me, pay me my money down. Pay me or go to jail. Pay me my money down. And I sing that when people haven't filled my invoices.
But they're all so beautiful and profound. And some of them are funny and heartbreaking and just great songs. And what is really special about it is that you are singing them with other people in the present moment. And something funny happens to your brain when you're singing in a room with, you know, 60, 100 people, that just kind of brings you to a higher plane an older plane. It's really transcendent.
And it connects you with people too. Like, it feels like a secret world that you're like discovering for the first time.
Typically you go to a concert or you go to a festival like Coachella or Bonnaroo. You're sitting there watching other people on stage make music and you're singing along or you're dancing and you're having a great time. But there's, you know, there's performers and then there's, you know, listeners and audience members. The spaces that we're in for traditional music are not like that. They're very participatory. People will just pick a song they'd like to lead, sing it, and then others can join in, sometimes with instruments, sometimes without, throw in different versions, throw in harmonies, and sometimes someone will sing a version of a song that is different from the one you know. There are variants of this stuff all over.
But one of my favorite things about going to those events is being able to make friends with people from different generations.
Jules is in their 20s.
A lot of people that I know are only really friends with people who are their age, which is totally fair, but I learned so much from older folks.
Lafayette also started by learning from older generations at those smaller events.
There's one in Staten Island where there was a retirement home for sailors and where a lot of these songs actually were written down and recorded in the 30s, the 1930s. I would go and I would hear all of these songs and I began to learn what they were used for and why particular songs ended up where they were and also how all of these songs came to be because of that interaction between sailors and cultures in the 19th century.
Whenever we get to go to maritime spaces like the town of Essex, Connecticut, or Mystic Seaport, or the South Street Seaport Museum downtown in New York, a lot of those places have a lot of pride of they exist because of sea travel and ships. They care a lot about that being the foundation of their town. I think there are a lot of other towns in the U.S. that are built on other things like the automotive industry or farming. A lot of towns, especially in New England, but all over the U.S., sailing is their history. It is part of like the American fabric. And it's cool to get to go sing these songs in those places where they mean a lot to people because that's how their culture was built.
What do the songs tell us about how sailors worked and lived? What can these songs tell us about the actual life on board a ship?
The reason that sea shanties as work songs evolved is because you had sailors who all had to make their labor as efficient as possible. You need to all haul on the rope at the same time. You need to all push this bar at the same time. And the way you do that is you're following a rhythm. That rhythm would be set by the shantyman who would be singing this call and response song. And then you also had stuff like pulling up a wet mast or raising anchor or pumping the decks. All of these were team-based tasks. You were working side by side.
Essequibo River is the king of rivers all. But it's Tananawi or somebody, yo.
The sort of golden age of shanties, like the golden age of that kind of sailing, starts when we started doing mass globalized transit on ships. And it ends when ships became like steamships. And when you no longer needed to make people into a machine, basically, it is an art form that exists to turn people into a machine, to have everybody push at the same time or pull at the same time.
Shanties also tell us a lot about the racial makeup of these crews. These songs are a mix of African and Afro-Caribbean rhythms and Irish melodies. So you had black and white sailors working side by side. And it's not to say that there wasn't racism on these ships, but because sailors were at sea, you know, for months at a time, and there was this sort of maritime subculture between ports, sailors did have to get along. When you're up on the mast and it's a storm and you've got to make sure that the mast is brought in, you can't have time for worrying about, oh, well, I don't really like this guy because of his race.
Yeah, a lot of these songs are songs of labor that also incorporate like the other things people were experiencing. Like there's so many sea shanties that are like, I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
You hear a lot of songs that are complaining about the work conditions. You also hear a lot of songs about, oh, I've been to this port and I'm going to that one next. And I'm going round the Horn, which was a big mark for a sailor, is to go round Cape Horn because it was a very dangerous passage at the time. You also hear a lot about missing their lives on shore, missing particular people they might have left. Maybe they're gone for months or years at a time, and will this person remember me? Will they recognize me when I get back?
From Tower Hall down to Blackwall, she'll wander, weep, and moan, all for her jolly sailor bold until he does return. Her heart is pierced by Cupid, she disdains all glittering gold. There is nothing can console her but her jolly sailor bold.
We've called this season Off the Plank because we wanted to profile pirates like Captain Kidd and Black Sam Bellamy. But Jules says we've romanticized pirates. For example, they did not swing on the rigging singing A Pirate's Life for Me.
The golden age of piracy was the 1700s, and the golden age of sea shanties was the 1800s, which means that pirates didn't sing sea shanties, and that makes me sad.
But as we get further and further removed from this period of history, we begin to lose those distinctions, and sailors and pirates and, you know, yo-ho-ho, a bottle of rum, they all sort of meld together.
I think a lot of misconceptions about the era come from maybe stuff that is quite wonderful, things like the art of Howard Pyle or Treasure Island or Pirates of the Caribbean.
I won't begin to put a number on the number of misconceptions that have come out of popular culture, but, you know, as we've said, part of the reason that you get these misconceptions is because people are interested in pirates and they're interested in the idea of going to sea and maybe starting your life over. It represents a way to get away from society and a place where, you know, you could reinvent yourself. And that's really cool. And why wouldn't you want to sing about that?
Something that they do get at in Pirates of the Caribbean is that the romantic view of sailing is about freedom. It's about, you know, I think he says something like, bring me that horizon, you know, like you can, like if you're on a ship, and obviously this wasn't the reality of most sailors or even pirates' lives, but this romantic idea that if you're on a ship, you can go anywhere, you can make anything of yourself. That's a very powerful notion.
It can be difficult to appreciate this in our present day, but until very recently, if you wanted to go anywhere fast, you had to get on a boat. And if you wanted to go anywhere far, you had to get on a ship. And sea travel was the most efficient method by which people could get around for hundreds of years. But it also represented something that was very scary. For a lot of people who crossed the Atlantic one way or the other, be it for immigration reasons or for merchant travel or being brought against their will, this was something that they had never done before. Maybe they were never going to do it again. And the sea was not something that people could control. So it entered, you know, really the fabric of our imagination, and it still holds a real place in our imagination as a place of danger, but also of new possibilities. There was a chance that you wouldn't make it across the ocean, but there was also a chance that you would, and you would have a chance to start a new life.
If fate should ever tempt my feet mid far-off scenes to roam, I still should think with love of thee my rocky wave-bound home. And here in graver, gayer mood, I on the water float, and cheerily row, and cheerily row, my bonny, bonny boat. And cheerily row, and cheerily row, my bonny, bonny boat.
The Ranzo Boys are Lafayette Matthews, Jules Pipearl, and Lindsay Smith. Be sure to listen at the end of every episode this season for songs by the Ranzo Boys. This podcast comes to you from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan.